Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast, where we highlight our weekly newsletter. I'm Ruth Ayers, the editor behind the scenes at the Choice Literacy site. I love our community because we advocate for every teacher as an expert professional in the classroom. We believe students have a choice and voice in what they read and write. Hi, everyone. It is finally happening. Our courses are being sent out to the world. Members, you will find instant access at our site. Make sure to check out our contributor courses. The theme is Empower Choice, and there is an elementary contributor and a secondary contributor course. You'll be able to get to know our contributors. There's no place else that you can have access to the front lines of classrooms and schools like you can at Choice Literacy. Most of our contributors carry full-time contracts with schools and write to figure things out. If you want to be inspired by people who are spending their days with kids, then this is the place to be. Our January featured contributor is Christy Rush Levine. Christy is a middle school language arts teacher in a suburb of Chicago. This week, we are featuring her course, Meaningful Reading Conferences, 5-Minute Wonders. I'm sure all of us have struggled with meaningful reading conferences, and Christy is no exception. Yet, she's figured out some strategies and techniques to deepen student reflection and understanding of books while conferring. She isn't rushed, and she shares her secrets and loads of inspiration in her new course. Members of Choice Literacy can access this for free. In the lead essay, I share a little about puppy training and the way it is frustrating for my teenage sons, yet it is also insightful. Find Ways to Offer Praise by me, Ruth Ayers. I have a German Shepherd puppy, and my quest since she's arrived in our home has been to train her so that she grows up to be a respectful and calm dog. Currently, she is exceptionally cute, as puppies are. Given my decades as an educator, I know that cute wears off. When it does, the hope is a well-mannered dog remains. Since I'm an educator and not a dog trainer, I Googled how to train a dog. It turns out that there are many philosophies when it comes to dog training. To anyone who knows me, it is not a surprise that I'm drawn to the belief in positive reinforcement. The idea is that rather than reprimanding poor behavior, you find ways to offer praise. For example, when she's biting my feet, instead of saying, "No," I say, "Look." When she looks up at me, I praise her and give her a treat. When she swipes Jordan's wrestling shoe from his sports bag, instead of yelling, "No," I say, "Look." When she looks up at me, I praise her, give her a treat, and take the shoe. When she barks incessantly, instead of shouting, "No," I say, "Look." When she looks up at me, I praise her and give her a treat. This line of training has been frustrating to the kids. They reason that she needs to get in trouble for doing the wrong thing so she can learn. I believe she just needs to learn to do the right thing and there won't be many problems. It's really not all that different from how mom treats us, Sam said. What do you mean? Jordan said. She's always telling us the good stuff we do. It makes you want to do more good stuff, but sometimes it makes me mad because I think you should get in trouble. My husband, Andy, chuckled from the brutal honesty of the statement from one brother to another. Yeah, Jordan said, I think you should get in trouble a lot more than you do. It's human nature to want justice. I'm just not convinced that policing poor behavior will ever have a positive impact on the environment. I believe people, and my cute puppy, want to do the right thing. There are times when the puppy needs a little more redirection. In those moments, she gets a timeout. Some days she has many timeouts. Many days she has none. The same is true with humans. Some days we need more redirection and a little timeout, or a lot of timeout. Many days we chuck along just fine. As the new year brings challenges, may we remember to focus on the positive behaviors we see in others. Offer a bit of praise, perhaps give a treat, and maybe even find a puppy to play with. Our articles and videos feature full-time teachers and literacy leaders who spend every day in classrooms. Classy Classroom content is updated continuously with 4 to 6 new features published each week. This week's theme is equity. In laying the foundation for an equitable classroom, Gretchen Schrader shares the building blocks she uses to define equity for herself and her students, as well as a practical way to put them into action in her rural high school classroom. Gretchen writes, "I think that all teachers would agree that equity is an important aspect of education, but sometimes big concepts such as equity can seem daunting to the individual teacher. When there are so many elements at the system level that must be addressed to achieve equity in our schools, such as funding and legislation, it's easy to feel defeated. Defeat has at times made me think, what can I possibly do? When I've had these feelings, I remind myself that what I can do is work on building equity within my own classroom." In the remainder of the article, Gretchen outlines the building blocks she uses to plan and reflect on her lessons. In 3 small moves to make a more inclusive classroom, Leanne Eck reflects on small moves she made to create a more inclusive classroom. Be inspired by Leanne to do this same kind of reflection and put these actions in place. In an encore video, Stella Vialba scaffolds the language development of her 1st and 2nd grade English language learners during Read Aloud by highlighting vocabulary and providing a tool to assist with a partner retelling activity. Our contributors are listening and looking hard for those spontaneous, teachable moments when they can move a child forward as a reader and writer. Each week, we offer free articles to empower all educators to do the same. Every teacher wants to be more inclusive, but where do you begin? Melanie Meehan presents 3 practical starting points in her article, Becoming More Inclusive, first published on the site in 2019. On a Year of Reading blog, Frankie Siberson considers the racist stereotypes in books that feature monkeys. "I think this is an important consideration for all teachers." Frankie's blog post reflects on her own understanding and offers key resources to become educated about racist stereotypes in children's literature. In Building Cultural Awareness, Stella Vialba explains how frustrations with the families of English language learners can come from the misunderstandings of cultural norms, and gives some tips for building awareness. Stella wrote this article in 2019, and the influence of this article is critical today. I invited Stella to join the podcast to discuss her article and current thinking about equity in classrooms, as well as her course, English Language Learners and Literacy Instruction. I'm happy to welcome Stella Vialba to the Big Fresh podcast. Stella's been a longtime contributor to Choice Literacy. So if you received the newsletter or you've been around the site, I'm sure you've read some of her articles or have seen her in action in video. Stella, welcome.
Thank you, Ruth. I'm so excited to be in conversation with you today.
So Stella, will you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, absolutely. I You know, when people ask me for introduction, I always think about how that's not a simple thing anymore because we are multidimensional human beings. And I think about that and about our students as well. You know, what does an introduction mean? So when I think about pieces of my identity, I identify myself as a thinker. I am a writer. I am a reader. I love to read. Read is a big part of my life. I'm from Argentina. My parents are from Paraguay. I was raised in a household where both of our cultures and our country's tradition were honored and respected. I am multilingual. My parents are bilingual as well. They speak Spanish as a first language. In Guarani, which is an indigenous language, Paraguay is one of the only country in South America with two official languages. They speak both of them. And then my sister and I speak Spanish and English and a little bit of Guarani as well. And all of these pieces of my identity is what makes me who I am today and how I navigate the world. And of course, I am an educator. Teaching is at the heart of everything that I do. I am an EL teacher leader in Dublin City Schools in Ohio. And I have been in education for the past 22 years. I have to do a little bit of math there, but yes. That in my work has mostly been with English language learners.
Stella, I was really curious about how you were going to just introduce yourself because you have such a rich life. And I always learn something new about you every time we have a little chat. And so I think it's that reflection that allows so much richness to come out in your writing.
Thank you, Ruth. I used to be like before we will say, you know, introduce yourself and we will just tell our names and what we do. And I want to reconstruct that narrative because it's not that simple, right? We all have stories and we all have multiple part of our identities that come with us everywhere we go and show up in a room. And so I try to be very mindful when I think about introductions because all the pieces of us, of who we are parts that should be honored.
Stella, that is a beautiful way to look at it because we all are carrying these stories inside of us and we're constantly rewriting our stories and writing new stories about these as we're living our lives. It's one of the reasons we decided to make your article, Building Cultural Awareness, Free to Everyone. In the article, you explain how frustrations with the families of English language learners can come from misunderstandings of cultural norms, and you give some tips for building awareness. So you open the article with a scenario of teachers venting about what they saw English learners and their families do in school. I felt the tension, and I admired your line when you wrote, "There is so much to understand," is what I wish I had said, but I didn't. Stella, you do this often in your writing where you're in a situation and something happens and you wish that you would have responded differently. And you let us into that thinking. It's what makes your writing resonate within us. And so I'm wondering if you were dropped into this scenario today, what would you say to help us understand?
That's a beautiful question, Ruth. I think I will still say there is so much to understand. I will definitely start with that. But I will not stop there because like Maya Angelou says, once you know better, you do better, right? And what I will add to that is I will say there is so much to understand. And then I will step into the position that I am by saying one of the many lessons I have learned in this position as an EL teacher is that, and then I will continue, you know, with what is it that I've learned. And The reason why I'm phrasing it this way, the first part says there is so much to understand, is because every situation is unique. And then in the second part of my answer of like, you know, one of the many lessons that I have learned in this position, when I am saying that I am, number one, I'm honoring my own path that took me here, being a teacher, being in the presence of English language learners and or multilingual learners, have taught me so much and have made me so humbled about so many things. And I have to give myself first permission to own that space, you know, to occupy, to claim it, and change the narrative when it, in a situation like the one I'm describing in this article, Building Cultural Awareness, the conversation and the dialogue was all very negative. It was from a deficit point of view. There was no celebration of the child or of the journey or of the growth. There wasn't even curiosity. And I'm one of those people that value curiosity because it can lead us to reflect to deeper questions, and that in itself can lead it to deeper understanding. So one of the biggest lessons I've learned, Ruth, is that I gotta own that space first as an educator. I have to honor my own learning about servicing and working and learning alongside with English learners, claiming and giving space for that conversation, and also change the narrative. So I may say, you know, there is so much to understand. And one of the biggest lessons I've learned in this position as an EL teacher is that our families have an understanding of how education works, coming from their own cultural roots. And that may or may not be aligned with the way we look at it in the state, but that does not make it wrong. So I will frame it in a way that it also puts me in a learner perspective, not necessarily the expert, but a learner that is taking notes and learning alongside with our English learners and our families.
I think it's one of the reasons why you are so warm when somebody meets you and you offer this warm welcome. And when you just describe there the grace that you have with yourself, the celebration that you're looking for in the child, and then honoring the journey where everyone is, it translates to you becoming a person who it's safe to learn alongside. So in the article, you write about the ways cultural roots are how we make sense of the world. And you make people feel as though they belong. And I think one of the reasons is because you honor cultural roots. What is some of your advice for those who want to improve in the area of offering a warm welcome? And I'm even wondering, you know, why is a warm welcome important?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I think about, you know, a warm welcome, I think about, Ruth, how that can look so different in even throughout the day. Because sometimes we think about, in a very simple term, which is important, to greet our students in the morning, you know, as they come in into our classroom. But it goes beyond that. I believe a warm welcome goes into the daily choices that I, as an educator, am making in front of a child to make sure that this child feels seen and heard in the community of learners, not only by me, but by other students as well. I know, Ruth, and I acknowledge and understand that in any given day, there's 1,001 things we got to do to get ready for the day. You know, do I have my projector on? Do I have my mentor text ready for my mini lesson? Did I answer that note from the office? There is a lot of things happening in the classroom all the time. But I also think that a warm welcome can be when I am doing my reading or my writing conferences throughout the classroom. And I'm thinking right now of the English learner who just arrived in the country and who is on the beginning journey of learning English. They're usually very, very quiet and they're still processing everything that is going on. And even though they may not have the language yet to communicate, we know that they carry story and that they carry their own feelings of being in our classroom. So I think about a warm welcome during that conference time. I'll sit next to the child and look at his, her, or their work and see what they're doing. Making eye contact and smiling, because that's a universal language understood understood by most. I love writing notes, Ruth, and I think about how even writing a simple note to a child, especially the ones that just arrived, that might be confused and that they're processing a lot of what's going on in the classroom, and just saying, "I am so happy you are here today," is a way that I'm telling the child, even though there is a lot of things happening in our classroom, I see you. I acknowledge you, and I am so happy you're here. I also think about partnerships throughout the day. You know, our classrooms are a community of learners, so we're not doing this work in isolation. And it doesn't matter where they are in their journey as a second or third or fourth language acquisition, it's important that a child has a partner to do some work and some thinking with, regardless of the language proficiency. So making sure that they're partnering up with someone that also extends that warm welcome. So again, I think about how can I extend this notion of warm welcome throughout the day? What are some of the little intentional things that I can do? And also making sure that I bring the community in my classroom alongside with me on this, because it's, I truly believe in that power of collaboration. And children are wonderful ambassadors. They are wonderful at making sure other people feel seen as well. So I wouldn't do this job and I wouldn't do this work without their input and without their help.
It makes so much sense. And the word that I kept hearing you say was the idea of being intentional and purposeful in the work. It's not just a single decision, like, let me be happy to see people the first time I see them at the beginning of the day, but extending that all day long. It's one of the reasons why I'm excited about releasing your course called English Learners and Literacy Instruction. It's a deep dive course, which is the most intense course that we have on the site. It comes with 6 keynote presentations that you recorded and more than 50 articles and videos from our collection. The course is excellent for those who wish they had a guide to navigate understanding and teaching English learners. You are a perfect guide, Stella, because of your practical information. What are some of the basic principles for working with English learners?
Thank you, Ruth. I am so excited about the release of that course. I put a lot of love and with my hope that it will reach many teachers, educators, communities of learners, as we all learn alongside our English learners, our multilingual learners. So I love this question, you know, what are some of the basic principles for working with English learners? And the way I see it is I'm going to unpack it in 3 ways. First, the teacher. You know, I will think about always starting with self, a bit of a reflection. You know, I will start with, well, what do I know about teaching English learners? Just like our students, teachers have different backgrounds and different experiences. Some have worked alongside with English learners for years, and some others are, this is a new experience. So a very good starting point is asking ourselves, what do I know? And then I will add also, this is a very important question, Ruth, as we think about equity in our education. Are there any implicit bias that I may need to unpack? we may not realize that sometimes our previous experience lives in our unconscious and then shows up at different times with different interactions. So this is ongoing work when we think about servicing our students. It's just really checking ourselves and saying, you know, where am I in some of my beliefs? Another question, and again, this is still with the teacher's layer, is, you know, asking ourselves, how much do I understand about how language, second language acquisition works? And if this is brand new, then that's definitely worth exploring. And in the course, we definitely dive deep into what the second language acquisition looks like. And then I will also ask myself as an educator, you know, what am I reading and who am I listening to make sure that I continue to build on this foundation and understanding about working with multilingual learners. So from the teacher's point of view, that's what I will say when it comes to principles of working with English learners. When it comes to the child, I will say, know that everyone learns at a different rate. One of the most hurtful things that we can do is compare our English learners. And that's something that will never serve the child, right? Because we all learn at a different pace. So sometimes when I hear in meetings, you know, I'm surprised this child hasn't learned English as fast because his brother learned English very fast. When we say things like that, we are measuring one child against another, when the truth of the matter is that each of us are individuals and we will embrace that second language process in very different ways. For some, it will be a very long road, and for some others, they'll just absorb right away. That does not mean that there's anything that we need to worry about the child. It just means they're learning at a different pace. I will also say, Ruth, the gift of time. I know that I have written about this in my articles before. I truly believe that our English learners, our multilingual learners, are not only learning English as their third, fourth, fifth language, but they're also learning a system of education, which is might be very different from the one back home. They're learning the culture, and they're learning our culture of how we do things. And one of the things that we have here in the United States is this culture of rush, of doing things fast. And if somebody doesn't show growth in an X amount of time, then we're pushing for other types of interventions that may or may not lead it to a special education. And I am here more to say, let's really make sure that we're not rushing. If we understand research is showing that it takes about 5 to 7 years to learn a language proficiently. And it certainly, Ruth, took me that long because English is my second language. So why wouldn't we give the same gift of time for our students? And then the third layer, when it comes to basic principles of teaching English learners, I will think about families. I will think that families, everyone bring a story. Say some families may want to share that story, some may not, and that is okay. When families ask, what can I do to support my child? I always say the number one advice I give to the families I get to work with is make sure you keep on cultivating your first language at home. They are going to learn English. They live in the United States now. They'll learn that with time. I am not worried about that. What I am worried is at the loss of that first language or that home language that they together use it in the family. For me, it's very important that we advocate for that. And then the other one last piece with families is also rethinking about our language sometimes, because we come from cultures that honor the written word, when a lot of other cultures that come from collectivist culture honor the oral traditions. It's a big difference, Ruth, when we tell a family, you know, make sure that you're reading stories to your child every night. We will say that because we honor the written word. But it is equally important to say, you know, make sure that you tell stories at the table or tell stories at bedtime. Because when we say something like that, we're honoring the oral tradition of families. So equally important to honor both.
Stella, I think it's so wise to think about those different layers. And as you were talking, because I've been through your course, it brought it all together, because I'm like, yes, you did think about those three layers throughout each of your sessions. So your course is covering topics like welcoming families, classroom environments, instructional strategies, understanding the silent period, which was really mind-opening for me. I appreciated that session. And also, you end the course with a session on building an inclusive classroom library, which was so much fun to go through and to consider. What do you think is helpful to educators about spending time learning in this course?
Yes, Ruth, definitely there's a lot to explore in this course. And, you know, now that you're mentioning also the inclusive classroom, we should do a podcast episode just on books and inclusive, you know, children's literature, because I think that's so exciting, because there's so many wonderful stories out there. But to answer your question, you know, what will be helpful for educators? I will say, you know, everyone will have a different entry point to this course. Again, you know, honoring your own path. If you have worked with English learners, you are going to bring your own funds of knowledge to the table. You are going to bring your own experience. If this is your first time, there is a lot of unpacking to do. My advice will be to identify where you feel very strong in your understanding and where would you like to go deeper into understanding the pedagogy of working with multilingual learners. And then, of course, Ruth, I will say our readers can let us know, right, if there is something more that they want to learn, so that we can also be doing the work of thinkers and writers and see what else we can explore together.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, don't we love it when somebody asks us a question and it gives us another idea or another topic for an article? And just understanding what people want to hear more about is always so useful. What are some final words of encouragement for teachers deepening their understanding of English language learners?
You know, Ruth, one of the biggest lessons I've learned, I learned it very early in my teaching career from Yetta Goodman, who was a big advocate on kid watching, right? On observing children and being in their presence and trying to understand the ways that they learn, the ways that they show up, the ways that they are, so that we know what to do next, right? And how to service them better. And I truly believe that kid watching had made such a significant impact in my career as an educator, because it is where I get my understanding, is how I'm able to speak about multilingual learners. I just spend a lot of time watching and listening and being in their presence, because I understand that everyone is different and that everyone will be coming from a different entry point. I will also say, Ruth, you know, to be positively curious when seeking to understand. And I add the word positively there, because we sometimes curiosity can also be, can come across as offensive, because we want to try to understand and we're curious, but we're asking things that maybe we shouldn't be asking. So positively curious, as in like trying to understand now why something is the way it is, because you want to know how to do things better for the child. And then also, you know, just check yourself. You know, I think it's important for all of us as educators just to keep coming back to center to make sure that we are operating from a place of understanding, from a place of compassion, and from a place of advocacy, because everybody needs a champion. And that is the truth for every child, regardless of the language that they speak, regardless of the country that they're born.
Everyone does need a champion. And Stella, you inspire us to go and be that person for children. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and taking some time to talk with us.
Thank you, Ruth. It's such an honor to be thinkers with you in this space and with all the teachers and educators that are committed to this work. Very, very excited to continue our kid watching and learning and listening from the best, which are our students.
Our Leaders Lounge is dedicated to content for literacy coaches and school leaders. You will find 2 to 4 new features each week. This week, Literacy Leader members will find our course from last spring is open again. Are you working with teachers virtually? If so, check out the course, Virtual Coaching, Working with Individuals. Experienced literacy coaches share their strategies for adapting their one-on-one coaching techniques to a remote environment. We know our site is full of great information. This is a curated content course where we gather related content and package it in an organized learning experience. In the article, Listening and Learning from Literature, Stephanie Affinito proposes that a first step towards anti-racist coaching and teaching is through carefully selecting the books we read and recommend to teachers. I appreciate Stephanie's reflection and nudge in this article and hope we all follow her lead. Near the end of her article, Stephanie writes, "To truly coach with equity and for social justice, we must listen. We must listen to the voices that have been marginalized, to the messages the world is sending us, and to the call to action that is deep inside each of us. This is challenging work, often filled with tension, defensive behavior, fear, and even shame. But I've found that when we first ground those conversations around fictional characters, our defenses are lower, our empathy is higher, and we are more willing to consider the possibilities that the world does not operate fairly and justly for everyone." Pierrette McCamey explains what anti-racist teachers do differently in their classrooms. This article from The Atlantic is a must-read for all instructional leaders. Choice Literacy is a proudly independent community. We are not associated with any commercial publisher. We don't recommend packaged or scripted programs. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes or sign up for the Big Fresh newsletter so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep offering choice and voice to students in what they read and write. And don't forget to keep your soul aloft. Shine on, everyone.